Hi, and welcome to NASIO Voices, where we talk all things state IT. I'm Amy Glasscock at my home office in Lexington, Kentucky.
And I'm Matt Pincus, coming to you live from my home office here in Washington, D.C. Today's episode is published along with our mid-year webcast series.
Yep, and we are interviewing 2020 NASIO Technology Champion Award winner Kevin Jones, who is the CIO for the Indiana Department of Child Services.
For those of you who may not know, NASIO's Technology Champion Award recognizes one individual annually for outstanding contributions in the field of information technology in the public sector.
The recipient champions the critical role of IT and innovation in the business and continuity of state government and advances the belief that IT is a transformational tool that enables positive change for citizens. So, let's get to it. Kevin, thank you so much for joining us on NASIO Voices.
Thank you. It was an honor and privilege to be here.
So, Kevin, first off, we'd love to get to know you a little bit better. Can you talk to us a little bit about your background and how you've ended up as CIO of the Indiana Department of Child Services?
Sure. Yeah, so I'm 20 plus years into IT. I'm a graduate of Purdue University, computer electrical engineering background. Also a graduate from the Johns Hopkins University, master's in systems engineering, and also started doctoral studies there, but haven't started to complete it. Looking forward to at some point getting to that after I finish all this other work that I'm doing for my current career. But spent a tremendous amount of time out in the, mostly in the private sector, building solutions, you know, end-to-end solutions, not just building applications, but really looking at holistic solutions. I've worked in the pharmaceutical world, manufacturing world, government space, and then IT specific space, and software development and system development, systems engineering. And really, I've always taken the approach of being a systems engineer focus, looking at the end-to-end, the complete socio-technical enterprise, and understanding all the aspects and dynamics of my entire environment and building solutions that fit each one of those things or identifying best fits for those. So after spending a great deal of time in the private sector, which demands and commands a lot of my time, and having ownership in an organization and selling that or transitioning that organization, I had an opportunity to come work with the state of Indiana, particularly at that point in time with Family and Social Services, in which they were embarking on a journey where they had started implementing a Medicaid system, an eligibility system, and a data warehouse at one time, which is a lot of work to and a lot of change. And they were looking for someone who had the technical background and depth of knowledge that I had, as well as the breadth of knowledge that I had, to come in and help them with some of the challenges that we're having with all of that work being in flight. One particular initiative they gave me to focus on was the Medicaid system. And I was able to change a project that was heading in a direction that wasn't as favorable as we would like it to be. And within 12 to 18 months, turn that to a delivered solution, certified and ready to go. And after doing that, you know, at that point, I'm like, hey, you know, I might transition back to the private sector. Got a great opportunity and saw the challenges of government. And they came to me, the governor's office and the director of the state personnel group at the time came to me and asked me specifically to move over to the Department of Child Services, in which they were in the same situation. They hadn't began the process, but they were requiring them to upgrade systems that were 20 plus years old in one case and 10 or 15 years plus old in another, and replacing the child support system and the child welfare system. And the federal government was changing how they built systems. So they had a new systems engineering approach, which for me was perfect, come in and be able to practice my discipline, help the most vulnerable population in our state and in our country, children who need us to help them, and be able to ensure that I'm doing a good service for people who need us most. So that's how I got to where I am today.
That's great. And how long have you been at Department of Child Services?
So in August of 2020 would be my third year.
Wow. So can you talk to us a little bit about your work at Child Services from, I guess, both from a technical perspective, you know, what you do on a daily basis, as well as practical standpoint?
Absolutely. I look at my whole system. My whole system includes the children and includes the family case manager that is responsible for delivering the positive outcomes to the children and the families. So I start with them. They're my foundation. And if something is wrong with them, I have to focus on that. So I first came in and I looked at the pain points that the family case managers had in delivering those positive outcomes to our children and seeing children being stuck in our care longer than they should be. And sometimes children that should not be in our care to begin with being brought into our care. So one of the things I really focused on was what is causing that problem? And a lot of it was a lack of data frontline, a lack of even more so a lack of business intelligence that can inform our family case managers on what is the best decision or what are some strategies and tactics that may help you when you get stuck in a solution or in a situation providing a solution to a child, which with each child, each system, each solution or each outcome is different because their problems and the challenges they have within their families are different. So you needed something more dynamic that could do that. Providing a current solution that we had where it just gave an FCM data, and that data required an FCM to be a data analyst, required them to possibly be a data scientist, and then an expert in child psychology versus just basically practicing their discipline and being social workers, being people who focus on helping people get to where they need to be in their life. We had to come in and provide a solution that could actually help them with all of those other pieces so that they can just practice their discipline. I focused on looking at all of the individuals who spend more of their time out of place and doing work that was out of place and building a solution that could help support them effectively, complement and supplement them in the areas where they are not experts and provide them and bridge the gap between experts so that frontline information can be received and the critical analysis people who have expertise in whether it be medical solutions, mental health solutions, whatever that is, can get that data immediately, instantaneously, and on demand frontline to the individuals that need to be there. So that was the holistic perspective that I wanted to take with the organization. And I was blessed and fortunate to have leadership like Governor Holcomb and Director Terry Stignan and Eric Miller, who's our chief of staff, who said to me, Kevin, we know your approach. We want to take the same approach with you. We want to allow you to practice your discipline, practice what you've done in previous environments. We'll stay out of your way and allow you to fully engage with the organization and build a holistic solution that is going to deliver the positive outcomes to children and families that we expect and we require from our administration to our constituents.
That's so great. So the person who nominated you described you as, quote, the epitome of CIO as problem solver. So what were some of the problems that your department was facing or is facing that you're seeking to solve?
So I'll give you one specific example. I can give you a ton of them, but perfect. One specific example that we actually have seen some positive results. The state of Indiana in our department, when I first came, we had close to 50% turnover in our family case managers. And we speculated a lot about why is that. And most people were easy to dismiss that, oh, we don't pay them enough. Mm-hmm. And one of the things I want to do in my discipline, it tells me to use evidence to make decisions. So using Salesforce and MuleSoft, I built a platform that actually allows me to capture data for all of our voluntary leave. So over the course of a year to 6 months, we started capturing the data for all of the voluntary leave. We had individuals who were leaving and we got everything. We have 24 questions and some sub questions to go with it. We're able to grab the evidence and data that stated that over 53% of our voluntary leave primary reasons were because their expectations of pre-employment of what the job was going to be were completely different than what they experienced when they got on the job. So I decided that we wanted to give them the experience of the job prior to being hired. So what we decided to do was to implement virtual reality that gives them a fully simulated real life actor engagement from end to end. From the time they go into a home, do an assessment, talk to mom, talk to boyfriend in the house, talk to the baby who actually has a bruise from her wrist to her elbow visible. Mom is in a state of impairment due to drugs. Boyfriend's in a state of impairment due to alcohol. And you have to go through and really feel the emotion of being in that situation and actually interview mom, boyfriend, and baby, and then at the end of that scenario, make a decision on, do I remove this child from the home? Two things happen. You can't hide from the emotion when you're in a fully immersed virtual reality simulation like that. Mm-hmm. So it allows you to really do an evaluation on that person prior to them being employed, and even after you've hired them in their early stages of training, how would they handle that situation? How do I need to further develop my training so that I can support this person becoming a long-term employee who's going to provide positive outcomes? But even more importantly, what it helped us do was it allowed us to give that simulated experience to individuals so that they can make an informed decision right then and there. Do I even want to take this job? They get to evaluate, do they want the job? We get to evaluate, is this person best suited or what are their needs to be an effective FCM? And it's helped us reduce our staff turnover. We reduced our staff turnover over 18% last year. And our total cost of staff turnover is $72 million a year, basically. And we've reduced that staff by 18% over last year. We're looking to reduce even further this year.
That is so amazing. And I would say that probably most states are experiencing similar turnover in that position. Bringing virtual reality into that is so cool. What are some of the other technologies that you've been able to implement since you've been there?
So inheriting an environment, an architecture like this, where you have solutions that are 23 years old and you have a mainframe that's still alive and you have, you know, a bunch of very other systems that someone sold somebody randomly and now you got to accommodate that. And one of the things I realized was in order for me to make this happen, the very first thing I had to do was to implement an omnichannel API. And our omnichannel API ended up being MuleSoft. MuleSoft is a product that allows us to create an API layer or a interface layer or a platform layer that no matter what technology is in my architecture, I can make them all talk to each other. And I can introduce new technologies to help us modernize. The other challenge of me implementing a new child support system was we're the first in the country to implement a child support system or to go down this path. And I came up with an architecture and most of the vendors, we brought them in, shared with my architecture and they all looked like, oh, I don't know if this can work. And then they went away and said, wait a minute, I think this can work. One of the challenges you have in replacing child support systems across the entire country, every state, same challenge. They're converting their mainframe into Java-like code as a half step. And some of them are spending just as much money to do that as I'm going to spend for replacing my entire system and moving it to a modern platform. So taking an omnichannel API, I used that as my foundation and said that I don't care what my front is on a case management system. There's thousands of those up there. But I need to replace my mainframe. So having that did two things. It allowed me to say, if I can't find something that's going to replace the mainframe, give me the blockchain functionality, give me the financial transaction cryptology so that I can make sure the fiscal transactions are in compliance with PUB 1075 requirements for all of us, and we have to deal with that, and still have the best, more modern current platforms on the top so my case managers and 90% of my continuity of business is being executed, we're there. So I implemented MuleSoft. Then I brought in a product called Cardinality AI. Cardinality AI allowed us to be able to take that technology in the mainframe and move all our complex financial transactions between Cardinality AI and a business rules engine. And through that, we were able to be able to say, now I can completely replace my mainframe and then if it's a Dynamics or a IBM Watson or a Salesforce on the front end, it wouldn't matter. And then the vendor brought in the Cardinality AI. They also brought in Salesforce. And Salesforce now handles all our fiscal transactions. That is really the core foundation of what I need in my architecture and what's required in my architecture, water-based platforms. No matter what the problem is, those platforms are like water. They take the form and shape of the problem. They fill the gaps so that we can execute and make sure the families on the other end are getting their money, they're getting their solutions, they're getting their outcomes, they're getting their services, and they're not impacted. And even more so, they get advanced. They can use their mobile apps. They can use their mobile phones. They can call from any platform. They can use Siri to give us an application. They have access to every technology, every possibility to engage with us. We don't limit them. We enhance their engagement so that they get fulfilled solutions on the other end. And through those platforms, through the technology, we now also build it in mind that other states who are struggling with this, who haven't figured it out and are spending 20 million, 30 million, 40 million. And we're going to spend 40 million to replace the entire thing. At one point, it was estimated to be over $200 million. We're going to spend 40 million to replace an entire system that any state can come and take. We build it so that they can come in and share, work with some of the same people we're working with, use the same platform. I give them my architecture. I give them all the work I have because I'm here to help everybody in my country.
Wonderful. Speaking of that, have you been talking to any other states about, you know, trying for them to try and adopt your model?
Man, I have probably about 13 or 14 states right now waiting for both my child support system and child welfare system. All our sister states, there's at least 10 states that have asked for even my RFPs that we wrote to just recreate our RFPs. And I've been doing that. In fact, there are some states that moved a little faster. I consulted with them and shared with my playbook and RFPs and documentation that I've written and my team has written. And I have a wonderful team. This wouldn't be possible without them. But we shared that. I put my team in place. You know, people call and talk to me. I'm like, look, there's only so much you need to go around. I have some great deputies that I'm mentoring and training and shepherding and planning succession. So talk to them. And if they can't answer the question, then they'll bring me in. But they're just as much a champion of this as I am. So, yes, I help as many people as are willing to listen to me.
That's great. You know, it's really interesting to hear you describe, you know, how you spent a fair amount of time in the private sector, came into state government, and then you were planning on going back and ultimately decided to stay and continue to serve your state. I can't say a lot of people would do that. So obviously, I mean, just listening to you, you have a clear dedication and just a sincere passion to public service. Can you talk just a little bit more about, you know, what particularly drew you to working in social and child services?
Yeah, there was only two areas that I would really work. I was once one of those people. I grew up poor, single parent household, Section 8 housing, supporting. And, you know, I was blessed and fortunate to be in magnet programs that allowed me to get a education that allowed me to compete. But even when I got to college, I saw how even my education, I was still not at the level of competition as some of my peers were, because some school systems just, man, they just push you even harder than you could be. And I was envious of that, but I've been fortunate to catch up. But I look at me and who I was 30 years ago. I've never forgotten who I was. And also, I'm a father of 8 children.
I have, wow.
Yeah, 4 8? Adults. 8. I have 4 adults. My oldest son is 28. He'll be 28 this year. And my youngest son will be 10. So
wow.
28
wow.
and 10. 18 years of kids, man. Yes. And,
bless you.
Yeah. So one of the things I realized, this is the biggest contributor. My first set of 4, they were all 2 years apart. They were there when I was in college. So I had plenty of time working what I had to work with, FedEx or UPS or meatpacking plant, whatever that was, working that job and going to college and being at home with my kids. I had plenty of time to engage with them. And then as they grew up and went out, I was able to get back in the private sector at a level where I was using my education and a career level. And then my younger kids started to grow up and it got to a point where they're like, Dad, I need you. And I realized that, you know, I had 2 kids that were entering middle school. And at the same time, I had an opportunity to go leave the private sector, go back to the public. It offered me an opportunity to work at a high level, solve some major problems that no one else in the state was doing. And then be able to come home and spend time with my children. One of the things that helped me realize and see, so when I got offered the opportunity to go back to the private sector and make a lot of money or stay in the public sector, I thought about it. And I realized that my children didn't need money from me anymore. They needed my time. So that second set of 4 needed my time. I realized that the same thing is applicable to private sector, public sector. I had spent time developing this superior education. Johns Hopkins instilled in us that you have developed this superior skill set. It doesn't necessarily belong just to you. It belongs to your community as well. And what I realized was I could go to the private sector, make a lot of money, generate a lot of tax revenue and pay a whole lot of taxes. And the Indiana Department of Child Services will get whatever in taxes split up across the agencies back, or I could take the time and give them a superior skill set that they would never get anywhere else. Come in and transform them, build a sustainable team to support it, even after I'm gone, and then I can go back and they will get hundreds of millions in return, and millions of people will be given a better opportunity, better outcomes because of that. So I realized that it was my responsibility to give time instead of money to sacrifice, because that one kid whose life is saved, if that one kid's life is changed and they interact with my child somewhere out in the world, I'm hoping that my positive changes that I give helps that kid have a positive engagement with my child. And I have a responsibility to my community and the community that my child is going to grow up in to assure that I've done as a father everything that I could do to make sure that the world around him, not just what I give him, but the world around him is a better place and is sustainable so that he can have the same positive outcomes and engagement as an adult with that same citizen who deserves the same opportunity. So that's why I say.
That's a hell of an answer. I don't have much more to say than that, but that is, I mean, super inspiring, and that, you know, being able to spend time with your kids and then obviously give back is just, you can't put a price on that. And then, you know, I was going to ask you how the ongoing pandemic has impacted your work, but given that you have 8 kids, I'm also interested to hear how this is impacting your personal life too.
Yeah. So it's helped my relationship with my kids because I planned a spring break, and unfortunately, we didn't get to go to Florida, just like everyone else didn't get to go to Florida. But I was home working, and I'm an essential worker, so I had to work. I couldn't take the time off. But my children, I have 2 teenagers, 1 senior in high school, 1 junior in high school. Then I have a middle schooler, and I have my baby boy, who's 9. The older kids, they sleep till, they stay up till 6 in the morning, and they sleep till 3. So they My daughter, she's in her room on the TikTok or whatever, so she don't care. But my son, when he's not playing his Nintendo Switch, he just wants to walk into my office and peek and see that I'm here, wave, and go back in his room. The fact that I could work and still be able to do that, that is amazing to me. Mm-hmm. And when I can shut it off and just, hey guys, turn the TV on in my office, come in, he'll come in and watch TV with me. They'll give me their little 5 minutes of a conversation that I don't understand anything they just said. And then we'll laugh and they'll go their separate ways and I'll go do what I'm doing. But the fact that I'm here and they can hear me and they can laugh at dad on a meeting, dad, you're talking loud, like I'm talking loud right now. All of that stuff is amazing. And the one thing that I will say that I've never shared who I was as a CIO with my kids. My kids just know dad who coached them, dad who drives them places, dad who will give them money, dad who will grill them steaks. They know that guy. Awesome thing is that for the first time, they get to see, this is my dad. He is actually somebody. He's not somebody we laugh at. He's really somebody to other people. He means somebody. And this award gave them context. They were like, wow, you really do stuff. I guess I do stuff. So for them, it's giving them an opportunity to see that this is the type of man that I want to be. They always wanted to be the man, the dad, the father, but they didn't know the professional. So they get firsthand look at the professional and respecting people and spending time building people, just like I spend time to build all those 8 individuals into young adults who are going to be productive members of society and all who have been. I do that for the 200, 300 people that work for me. I put just as much time into making those individuals more productive, hopefully building people who will replace me, and hopefully building people who will surpass me. And they see me doing that for other people, just like I do for them. It helps them see that it's better to give than receive. And they see that in me now, and I'm happy that they've gotten a chance to see that part of me, which I've kept from them for so long.
That's so cool. A lot of, I think, silver linings to what we're going through now. Absolutely. Yeah. So finally, we haven't had this on our podcast for several weeks now, but we're bringing it back. And it's something we like to call the lightning round. So okay. We ask you 3 quick questions and about your life outside of work. Okay. Number 1, what is your favorite food?
Bone-in Kobe F5 filet.
Wow, that is very specific.
Sounds delicious.
Yes.
What is your current hobby outside of work, assuming that you have time for any hobbies?
Yeah, don't judge me for all everyone. This might be political, but don't judge me. I either lift weights or I'm a shooter. I like to shoot. It lets me release.
All kinds of people like to do both of those.
Right.
All right. And number three, I think we've all been dreaming of where we can travel once we can travel again. So what's your favorite vacation spot?
Curaçao, there is this one hotel called the Boelis that has a lazy river that runs through the back patio. That is where me and my wife need to go.
Ah,
Yes.
sounds amazing.
Yes.
Wish we could all be there right now.
Absolutely.
Kevin, thank you seriously so much for giving us your time today, and congratulations on your Technology Champion Award. It is obviously well deserved. I wish we could give you all of the awards, and we hope to see you in person someday in the near future, my friend.
Yeah, I will be there. I'll look for you guys in October, hopefully.
Thanks.
All right,
Thanks,
thank you
Kevin.
guys.
Bye.
Bye. Bye-bye.
Thanks again for listening to NASIO Voices, especially during this time when I know your commutes, your routines, and your lives have been disrupted.
Yes, thank you all. For the last 8 weeks, we've published an episode weekly, largely focused on the coronavirus. We'll be back on May 20th with our regular bi-weekly schedule and format.
Stay safe, and if you want to catch up on any of our previous podcasts, you can find them at nasio.org in our Resource Center or on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, TuneIn, or anywhere you get podcasts.